feel like we're back onto a groove, Dave. Like, kind of getting back into the rhythm. Feels good. Feels good to be back. Yet again. Hey, did you hear?
Don't call it a comeback.
Don't call it a comeback. That's right. We're planning on just charting, topping the charts at number one on podcasts here very soon.
Coming for you, Joe Rogan.
We've said that before. We've given you plenty of warning.
There was a time, I just want to say this, where we had way more downloads than Joe. Where we made, I mean, of course, he wasn't even podcasting yet. But
well, he was podcasting before us.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Well, never mind. I take it all back.
Yeah, because I started saying, like, no. He was like doing it in like 2008 or something.
Was he popular? He wasn't popular.
Yeah, he was like, podcasting wasn't super popular, but it was like, he was the thing. Huh. Yeah.
Who knew?
I did.
I've just got too many memories to keep track of. And it's getting...
I think I did, and every single other person who's listening right now.
They knew? Is that like you're responding to my who knew question?
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people may have known.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's not a secret.
So today I was on a daddy-daughter date with my daughter. We went to Charleston's for dinner.
You know, is it my goddaughter?
Yes.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Precious
and
Mary.
And I told her, I was like, Mary, I used to work at Charleston's, not this one, in Edmond, where I went to school. And I said, it's very possible that some of the people working here right now were not born when I was working there. And I did the math and I said, no, they were born. But they would have been like, maybe that hostess up there, she may have only been like 18 months old. But, saving grace, they were all born.
Okay.
Not as old as I thought I was.
You're still pretty old.
Not as old as you.
That's true. I'm winning.
You're the seat of wisdom here, Adam.
Lord help us all. Hey, did you hear that? Pope Leo came out and told the priests not to use AI for their homilies.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I think I have mixed thoughts, honestly. On the one hand, I think I know exactly what he's saying, and I agree, okay, that AI is going to have a degrading effect on our creativity. I know that it will.
And wisdom, maybe?
It's so easy to use, okay? It's just so easy. And writing, being creative, is hard. Creating is difficult. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't, everyone would be a content creator. Everyone would be an influencer.
I think everybody is now, though.
I mean, yeah, but they're not, but they can't, they're starving. You know, the vast majority of...
What up, gang?
Channels, yeah. I mean, of channels on the internet, even the ones who seem to be very popular.
Smash that like button.
That's right. They're starving, actually. They're barely making any money. And most of them have to work other jobs because this is just sort of an expensive time suck of a hobby that this influencing thing is, right? And at the end of the day, it comes down to like they get some free stuff to promote on their channel. Like, oh, I got this sweater for free.
Okay, where are we with the AI and homilies?
Well, you know, this content creation is hard. So I think that by using AI, you can, you know, wow, you can like get this done very quickly, but you lose that, you stop working those muscles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's like you've been doing this manual labor and now you have a tractor and you can't tell me that, oh, I'm not going to lose any of my strength. Obviously you are. I mean, you don't have to throw those bales of hay, you know, now you have this machine that's doing it. Like you're going to definitely get weak fast. So because this is a muscle of the mind, that's not good. Right. I think that we ought to be doing the human thing ourselves. Pondering, creating. That's a human exercise. It's not the exercise of a machine. The difficulty is that it's using AI is so effective. You can really, really get all of this research done. I mean, we talked about this the other day, how, you know, when we started, it's, well, you know, AI is brand new. So for the last 10 years, every episode we've ever done is because we had to read a book or we had to do research. We had to really go out and learn something. We had to read a book, then go through and distill that book into like a summary, which you could turn into an outline just for one episode, right? Mm-hmm. We had to do that constantly. I could now, and I've done this already, like get on ChatGPT and say, hey, what should I talk about? And it spits out an entire outline. And literally, there's no prep involved. We can just show up and start having this conversation based on what ChatGPT suggests. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, it's a good suggestion.
Yeah,
that's
not bad.
That's the problem.
Right.
That it not only is it a good suggestion, like, here's quotes from church fathers I've never heard before. You know, like, wow, this is in many ways much better than I could do myself. So that's the temptation about, on the one hand, using AI yields maybe better homilies. Okay? But is it better for the, is it, but there's a cost. There's always a cost for every technology, everything from the tractor to the computer. There is a cost. Okay? And the problem with new technology is that you don't know what the cost is until you've already paid it. You have to pay it first. Before you know what it is. We have to pass the bill so we can find out what's in it.
That's right.
Okay, that's the problem.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So in this case, AI is such a wide scope. Wide, I mean, it's across the whole horizon of your own human activity, your day-to-day. So I'm with the Pope that,
that's good.
You know, I think that
as a Catholic,
we ought to be writing these ourselves. This ought to be a human-to-human interaction. The human shouldn't just be the mouthpiece of AI.
I like that. Yeah,
right, because when AI is writing your homilies, all you're just a speaker at that point, right? You're just a stereo. And that's not what we're supposed to be. Certainly not preaching from the pulpit. This is the proclamation of the gospel. This can only take place from a human being. A computer doesn't know the gospel. It might be able to mimic and say the words that other preachers have used, but at the end of the day, sharing the gospel is a human connection. It's this, you know, face-to-face interaction. AI will never be able to stand in the person of Christ.
Fact.
Right, and that's the problem. So, I think we all have to get real with ourselves and decide before we get too deep. Because once you get in, it's hard to go backwards. Where do I want AI to exist in my life? You have to decide, like, hey, I think actually it makes a lot of sense here, okay? When it comes to doing, you know, these tasks, these are really great things to delegate. And we have to say, this is where I'm putting up the boundaries. I'm not going to let AI into these aspects of my life, whatever that is, writing homilies, being, you know, that creative human side, knowing that it will make you slower, where, you know, like you could have better results with it. Is it always about the results? You know, as a society, are we willing to be poorer so that we can have more human flourishing?
Which sounds contradictory in terms.
It sounds stupid, honestly.
Yeah.
But I mean, when I say poorer, I should really say, are you willing to have less money? Because I think saying poorer actually embodies, I think that's a word that goes too far. I don't actually mean that. Because I think you might have less money, but you won't be poorer. You know, in many ways, you'll have more thing, you have more of the things that have ultimate value. So I don't know. I mean, I don't have the answers. I just have a lot of wondering and skepticism, honestly, about it. But I what I worry about is that we just run into this headlong without even stopping to consider first.
The Jurassic Park moment?
It's the Jurassic Park. Yeah, without having to ask if we should.
Yeah.
Because, and you will. And if you're one of those people who stops and says, you know, no, I'm not going to do this, you're going to get left behind. And maybe that's the right thing to do. Certainly like when it comes to your job, there's things that, you know, AI is going to change. It's unavoidable. You know, you gotta get with the times, you know, but there are just other things, you know, like I don't think we should be writing homilies with AI. I do kind of think that maybe like using AI as a research assistant is different from, hey, ChatGPT, what should I talk about? All right, here, yeah, go ahead and write that homily for me, and I'm just going to get up there and read it. I think that's what the Pope's getting at.
It's definitely a wild time in which there's only, you know, the last time I feel like that this time period is as uncertain about where the technology is taking us would be the advent of the internet.
Yeah.
And I am just so grateful to live where, like, to have grown up in the era of where the internet was just starting and we did not have AI, because, right. And I'm very grateful for that. I think the challenges that kids have growing, you know, moving forward with AI, like how to actually learn and read books and attention, is going to be scary.
A couple years ago, when Adam and I decided we wanted to lead our first pilgrimage, we asked around to find out who should we work with to help do this. And the thing we heard over and over again was Select International Tours. That's who you got to use. They're the best. Well, having used Select now, I can attest that they're incredible. No matter where it is you want to go in the world, Select has a tour ready for you. So whether you're interested in leading a pilgrimage or attending one, do yourself a favor and go to selectinternationaltours.com and take a look at everything they have to offer. You won't regret it. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. Here with Adam Minahan. We're going to be talking about the Dantinian Order. What, you don't like that word?
No, you sounded like an idiot.
Okay. Sometimes, you just got to, you know, don't fight reality, I guess.
Yeah. No, you're right.
But we are talking about the Dantinian Order.
We're talking about Dante again today. Yeah, so, you know, last episode.
All right, Mr. Wise Guy.
Okay.
How would you call the Order of Dante?
Are you in referencing the levels of how he maps
how
out?
How he structures the order of reality. He gives reality an order, and that's, you know, if you were going to say, since you're over here laughing at the things I'm saying, what would you call the Order of Dante in that sense?
I don't know. I would probably say something like how Dante structures and orders love.
Yeah. Or you could say Dantinian.
Dantinian.
Which I think sounds awesome.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah. So, I mean, like last episode we
talked... You Scrooge. You know what? Dude, I'll bet he has a place in his order for you that maybe we'll talk about.
I hope it's just not in the Inferno. Lord, please. But yeah, we are kind of, what was the last episode? We had talk about Dante and wonder and what he is. And we're just kind of on a little bit of a Dante kick just because...
You know, I don't know if it's just us or if there's like a broader Dante movement going on this Lent.
It's probably just
us. Is Hallow...
Are they they're doing Russian literature, Dostoevsky.
That's right. They're doing Dostoevsky. But I think that there is one of the, like, the great book or one of the... Anyway... I feel like there's
some revival.
There's like it's sort of a Dantinian Lent, if you will. I'm going to use that word as many times as possible.
Yeah, that's great. I'm enjoying it.
Which honestly, though, I really feel like Dante is well suited for Lent. You know, a time where you're really going to take a hard look at, you know, you're fasting, you're doing penance, which is
Right.
There's sort of a lot of that in the Divine Comedy.
Yeah. At least 2/3 of it.
Yes, at least 2/3. And I haven't made it to Paradiso yet, but I suspect that there's going to be a lot of, even there, once again, speculation, but you will see a lot of fruits of penance. And, you know, so even there will be like a penitential theme going on about, oh, I cleansed, you know, I'm here because I cleansed myself of these things.
Just for the clarity, though, there will be no penance in heaven.
No. There will be none in heaven, but there will still be like the fruits of penance.
Okay.
In heaven.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and again, so we're reading Purgatorio through Lent with our book group, and again, we'll give a shout out to Deacon Garlick's Ascend the Great Books podcast as they're going through it as well. So you can follow that, but. And I highly recommend
it. Yeah,
yeah. But before we get going, we have a delicious whiskey.
I picked up this bottle of whiskey today. It's a bottle of Angel's Envy, which I thought was apropos.
I knew you were going to say that.
And this though is a rare bottle of Angel's Envy. So there is the line Angel's Envy is named after the angel share of whiskey. So that's the portion of the whiskey that evaporates. You know, they start off, they fill up these barrels, you know, kind of all the way. And as more time goes on, more and more of the alcohol evaporates out of the, and so that's referred to as the angel share of the whiskey. So this is Angel's Envy. The idea was that this is the part the angels didn't get and they wish they did. Because it stayed in the barrel. This one is a rye, and it's aged in añejo tequila barrels. What are your thoughts? Because I was wondering what you'd think, because you are not a tequila guy.
I'm not a tequila guy, but there's no strong tequila taste to it. Here's the nose palate and finish, for the official nose palate and finish. So the nose is a floral and fruit forward, toasty vanilla with a subtle clove smokiness. The palate is baking spices and cracked pepper, tempered by herbal agave syrup, earthy tobacco, and brown sugar. Mm. And then the finish is soft and balanced with an orange blossom honey, tropical fruit, and French oak finish.
It's 104 proof. Between being strong and a rye, I was expecting a lot of really forward flavors, you know.
And there is.
There is, but it's so much
smoother.
Yeah, I mean, it's
what you expect.
I really try not to use the word smooth when talking about whiskey, because otherwise you just like, oh, smooth, everything's smooth. It's like all the whiskeys we drink are smooth, you know.
It's less harsh than what you expected.
There's typically rye has a very
distinct.
A bite to
yeah,
it.
There's aggressiveness.
Yes. And I felt like this one is actually a lot more muted than what I was expecting. Sort of like...
The earthy tobacco and brown sugar really pop.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. But what I'm just saying is that the rye, I thought was like, oh, really downplayed, which I'd expect with it being 104 proof, that part would really stand out. But I think it's fantastic.
Yep.
There's... What I like about it is that you get a big after, like the
long
back
finish.
End, a lot in the finish.
Yeah,
really like, which is kind of cool. I don't know.
Really
how
cool presentation.
I don't know if the science
fantastic
of doing
box.
That works. The box is also awesome.
The presentation is fantastic. Okay, so last week we were talking a little bit about, you know, how shocking it is, you know, when you go to, you know, from the vestibule of hell, limbo. Into like the first layer of hell, which you would assume would be something like, I don't know, you wouldn't assume it to be lust, I guess.
Liars, or, you know, or...
Yeah, something like that. But lust is the first one. You're like, what is that? Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be deep in hell. Like lust.
I was really shocked about this. In fact, I had to have someone's going to have to explain this to me.
Right.
Because I was just, especially as a man, growing up, as you become, you know, in your younger years, that's probably something that every man struggles with. And just trying to gain self-mastery over these like new and very strong passions in your life.
Appetites. Yeah.
And it is a serious sin. It truly is.
It'll send you to hell.
There's people in hell, right? But
so we should not downplay, like, oh, it's only the first level of hell.
Right,
like,
yeah, the first level of hell
is the worst.
Yeah, well, you're in hell.
Okay. Which is the worst.
Yeah, hell is the worst. Yeah, actually, there are, like, worse layers of hell, according to Dante.
Still.
And we should just point out that Dante is not writing this to say how hell actually is, okay? He's writing this as a moral treatise on the moral life itself, the progression of the moral life that we all go through, as he has Dante, the pilgrim, mm-hmm. which is the care he puts himself as the main character, going on this journey, okay? And so that's a really important thing to keep in mind. You can lose the forest for the trees sometimes when you're reading.
He was even in dark forest.
Yeah, he started in the middle of his life in a dark forest. So, yes, he does. Lust is one of the very first circles of hell. So there's limbo, which he puts, you know, as sort of like not kind of in lust
proper,
not in hell proper.
Yeah,
well, we don't even get me on limburgatory. Okay,
that's a callback.
I don't. Yeah, you'll have to stay till the end of the episode
after the fourth segment. Back and listen to our episode.
Yeah, if I become a doctor of the church, it will be because my contribution of limburgatory to church doctrine. I mean,
which really solidifies you not becoming a doctor of the church, but
absolutely.
Yeah.
It's more likely to become a famous cheese than I think anything else, but. So lust being the very first, and so as you get deeper in hell, so like as you progress, according to Dante, these are sins of a more deranged nature, okay, or more disordered, right? So, and I think that really goes to explain a lot. Well, why is lust in the mildest circle of hell? Because it's just not that much of a disorder, right? You actually have a natural desire to satisfy these things, okay? This is part of the consequence of the fall, right? That in the garden, our appetites and our will and our desires would have been perfectly ordered with the true, the good, and the beautiful, right? You know, that sexual passion you would have only had for your spouse. Right, not that you would have found creation perfectly beautiful, but only that would have, you know, part of you, that appetite would have been exactly ordered and informed by your reason towards the way God created things to be. We don't live in that world, right? And so he says that this is it's the first layer of hell, because the disorder is actually of a only minor. And it's just a minor infraction of disorder, right? Because you have a natural inclination towards this already. So, you know, when I found this, like, you know what, that makes a lot of sense. So you can see why, and we don't have to go through all of the contrapasos. If you haven't read the Divine Comedy, you should go read it. But I just want to talk about today the way he orders the afterlife, you know, and what that means for the moral life, right?
Okay. I think it's interesting too. We don't have to, how he orders. If you look at it from a from hell to purgatory, it's like the tip of a cone to the base of a cone, and the base of a cone to the tip of a cone. Yeah. Hey, one thing we don't do very often, but we want to make sure to ask you guys, if you're not a supporter of The Catholic Man Show, you can go to patreon.com/The Catholic Man Show. One of the things we're going to be posting, hopefully by the time this episode airs, is the sweet video that we made for The Catholic Man Show Campout this last year. It was epically done by our good friend Manny Marquez. You can go follow him on Instagram. He does fantastic work with Word on Fire and all these other big Catholic entities.
If you need somebody to shoot some good video for you, and you want to hire a good Catholic man,
Manny's the guy.
Manny, I mean, also he's the best. So he's also awesome.
So he and his good friend Rod, they came to the campout and they shot a ton of footage of the campout, and we put together a video
almost a documentary.
Yeah, it's kind of it's almost like a short, like mini documentary or short film. It was really fantastic. He did a really good job, and so we're going to release it to the patrons first before we release it out to the public. And it's pretty epic. So
also, we have 10 years coming up, dude.
I know. Yeah.
I feel like we should give something away.
What do you want to give away? A Summa? We still have another set of the Summa.
Well, I feel like we should at least give away a Summa.
What else do you think we should give away?
I don't know. Like a car.
Well, you just bought one, so we can give away your van.
I'll ask Pamela.
See what
she says.
Sign up for patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow, and you could possibly win a brand new Mercedes Sprinter van.
It has 300 miles on it now, so...
Basically brand new.
Still pretty brand new.
So, another reason to support us.
Because there is a non-zero number that's basically zero, but theoretically non-zero number that you could win my van.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe I probably didn't do a good job of explaining because we were hitting the break and I didn't get a chance to really flesh out this idea of...
The cones.
Of the cones, right? Of going into hell and then coming out of hell into purgatory. Like as Dante the Pilgrim, he's traveling through the afterlife. He travels through hell first, then goes up to purgatory, and then eventually makes it up into heaven as he's going through.
Yeah, it's interesting though because he descends... into hell,
right,
and then ascends the mountain of purgatory. So, in that way, they're inverse.
And he descends to hell on Good Friday.
That's right.
And then goes up after starting on what is a whole no, I guess on Easter he gets out on Easter.
I don't remember the day. Yeah. I don't remember if it's Holy Saturday or.
But
Easter
I guess
Sunday.
What I was saying when I was talking about the cones. So the point of if you say the least infraction of a sin.
Small sins to big sins.
To big sins. And then coming out of hell, you're going from big, basically, it's just a progression. It's just a continuation of through hell that goes back towards the very end of where we started in hell, which is the last, wall of fire, so to speak, in purgatory is sins of the flesh.
Yeah.
Of lust.
Yeah.
So it kind of starts and ends with lust.
Right. So this first, the first part of hell, he's got that we sent lustful, and then the gluttonous, and then the hoarders. These are all sins of natural appetite, right? Like, you're eating too much, or you need, basically we're starting with a good that we desire in a disordered amount.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's why he puts them at this first level of hell, because once again, you are starting with a good. In the last level of hell, you've got fraud. Okay. And I don't know if let's just go ahead and go there because we're already in. Yeah. I want to make sure we can get back to purgatory. So the bottom, the lowest circle of hell is traitors. So I think that is also kind of surprising. It's like, wait, traitors are at a lower, sins of lust are the top. It doesn't seem like, oh, you're a traitor. Well, a traitor to who? To your own country, that's worse than like adultery, or something. And once again, he's ordering this based on the level of disorder. So here's the problem with fraud, is that you have to so disfigure your soul in order to buy into it. You have to say the good is actually the bad. Okay? Take scam artists. people who are like trying to steal your grandmother's, you know, they're trying to con your grandmother out of their money.
The Nigerian prince.
Yeah. At the end of the day, how do they decide, like, oh, it's a good day. It's a good day for them based on how much they stole from your grandmother. Okay. So now all of a sudden they're viewing the good, you know, as something, their version of good is just evil. Okay. Whereas the man who is giving in to lust or gluttony, right? Food is actually good. Marital love is actually, it's incredibly good, right? So these things are good. You just are desiring them at the wrong, in the wrong amount or in the wrong way. Whereas the fraud, there is the thing that you have to disfigure yourself. The good that you are pursuing is actually just not good. It's actually just an evil that you have so, you know, disordered your view of reality that you have completely inverted things to where now the good that you pursue, there is no good in it. It's just bad. So that's why it's this complete inversion of, and why that would be a deeper level of hell, because the level of disorder is so much greater.
Correct.
So, of course, the lowest people in a Judas, he would be the great traitor who is eternally in Satan's mouth. Which feels, as we say in the liturgy, it is right and just. Seems that way. But, you know, so he's also got, you know, in these lower circles, well, he's got flatterers, sorcerers, thieves, deceivers, sowers of discord. And then that's right before what he calls the well, where you actually like get the full on fraud. So, that's how he has hell. So, you start off with
natural
appetites down to fraud, which is, there is no natural appetite for fraud. You have to totally disfigure yourself to acquire an appetite for fraud. So then when you move on,
and the beauty
to
of
the Purgatorio,
the beauty of how Dante wrote each of these books is they're like lapped onto each other. They're like grafted onto each other, where it's like concentric circles, right? So like the things, like, you know, when you enter into hell, you have to go on a boat and through the fire lake, you know, to get into hell. And when you get into purgatory, what do you do? But you're on this angelic boat, and what are they doing? They're singing Psalms 114. You know, when Israel went out of Egypt. And this is like the first image of purgatory, right?
It's this Exodus, like, yeah.
This is the beginning of, this begins Exodus, right? Where the souls are being led out of bondage, which is just such a beautiful image. Like, this is how we enter into purgatory, where at the gate, the angel guards, you know, are there at the entrance, and they draw these seven P's on, the letter P's on Dante's forehead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or you might say for us in English, it would be the letter S.
Right.
You know, yeah. In Latin, you know, you'd say peccatoribus. The P in the Inferno or in Purgatory is actually Italian, but it's like pecca something. It's same as peccatoribus in Latin. Pope Benedict was a big fan of the Divine Comedy. And he said, one of the things he said about it is that the Inferno reveals the profound seriousness of freedom. One becomes what one chooses. You know, that if you, the sins that you marry yourself to, and there really is, I find a lot of sort of like stark beauty, like just beauty in the truth of giving into sin, you really do give yourself over to it, almost like a marriage, right? That what is it after you get married when you like that?
The vows?
A marriage has to be
consummated.
Consummated. Thank you. That's the word. That like there's the temptation, right? And you have, with all serious sin, you have this moment on the brink. There's this, he's like, oh, I shouldn't do this. Mm-hmm. But then you engage, you choose, and you have this moment of consummation, mm-hmm. where you give yourself over, right? And so I think that's what Pope Benedict's talking about. You become that which you choose, and certainly,
yeah, and I mean, this is what Dante, continually talks about throughout, the Divine Comedy in general is like, but specifically in the Inferno and Purgatorio, where he's talking about how every sin is just disordered love, that it's not the absence of love, but it's love aimed wrong.
Right.
Question isn't like, what did you do? It's what do you love and in what order? And like that, that's the big, and that the bottom of hell is like, what do you love and what order is it? And the more, like you said, the more distortion of that love. Right. Yeah. It's a really good examination of conscience.
To this Dantinian episode of the Catholic Man Show. I think Dantinian would be a great name for a reindeer. If you have a reindeer, you're looking for a name, consider it. I think it feels like it works to me. We're sitting here talking about the Divine Comedy and the order that Dante lays out things. And how should it impact the way we think about the moral life, okay? Obviously, we're talking about, as you're going through the Inferno, we're talking about grave sin. But understanding the levels of disorder, I think, really can be very helpful when it comes to correcting it, okay? When we understand, I don't want to keep talking about it, but, the lustful side of, I think there's a lot of shame that people bear because of sins of the flesh, mm-hmm. such as those. And certainly without diminishing the serious nature of those sins, I think Dante is presenting a message of that's not shameful, right? By showing that, like, hey, of all the sins you can commit, this one has the least disorder in it, okay? It doesn't mean that it's no big deal, right, at all. But certainly, it's just not something. I think he's offering a hopeful message, in the correction thereof, right? That, you think so?
I think so.
Yeah. I think so. So when we get to the way he lays out purgatory is very, it's like we said in the beginning, sort of a mirror image. He has in the Inferno and in Purgatorio sort of an antechamber first, right? So you have this area you get to that's not quite in hell or purgatory proper, but is still, on the mountain of purgatory. And there he puts the late repentant.
Yeah. Not only the late repentant, but the, it's the excommunicated that.
So they're first. I mean, of the late repentant, the excommunicated are first.
Yeah, the excommunicated that.
Those
that
who are excommunicated, who still repented
at the end.
At the last moments, of their life. So they're like the worst kind of excommunicate, or of late repentant, right?
Right. That,
you would have received officials correction from the church and still said nah.
Right.
Right. But for even them, they get their own piece of the mountain. So, if that's not a hopeful message, right. So, I mean, and ultimately that's the purpose of excommunication. The reason the church excommunicates you is to bring about your conversion. Right. It's correct. Not a punishment. It's supposed to be an encouragement to return. When you're excommunicated, it's actually just a recognition of a state that already exists.
Right.
You have separated yourself. You've done this already by, you know, espousing yourself to either heretical doctrine or whatever it may be. You know, you've already done it. It's already happened. And the church is just coming on like along and saying, like, officially recognizing in such so that you might be mercifully called back, right? But yeah, so we've got they have to wait outside purgatory. They can't even start until they have to wait a certain period of time.
Like 30 times longer.
Well, so if they excommunicated, yeah, they have to wait 30 years. For every year they spent excommunicated, they have to wait 30 years at the base of this mountain before they can even make any progress. So we get them, and then once again we get an inverse. So the as you ascend the mountain, now you start with the most serious sins. So the first sin you have to deal with is pride.
Right.
Yep. Right. Because pride is essentially is the root of all sin, right? Every sin is an act of pride. So he orders that part of the mountain. It's based on the ladder of love. So it's very erotic in that way, you know, in a true sense of the word eros, mm-hmm. That we are, it is that love that moves us, right? That stirs our passions. The unmoved mover, right? So we've got, according to this ladder of love, we've got the most serious sins is misdirected love. So you've got the proud, the envious, and the wrathful. Then as you ascend...
Hold on. And I think this is important because like the contrapposto or like, you know, the thing that they have to work on with pride is, you know, they have this big massive stone on their slab on them, you know, and they're forced to look down on the ground.
Stoop. Yeah, they're stooping.
Down. You know, and this is like... pride isn't just arrogance. It's like this refusal to be small. Like, I must decrease so that he may increase. Mm-hmm. And so Dante forces you to be small by putting this like rock, this slab on you where you're hunched down because you're literally becoming small and there's this heavy weight on you.
Right.
And so you have to, you know, kind of ask yourself, you know, in this part of like, where is it that's heavy in my life? Mm-hmm. Like, what is it that's weighing me down where it's the inverse of I must decrease so he may increase? Where is it that I'm so prideful where I want to be the shining star and not Christ living through me?
Totally. Yes. So today, it was a tough day in the homeschool, right?
This happened.
Yeah. It was, so she had a tough day today.
Yeah.
And I was just telling her so much I've been thinking about Dante lately. And, you know, I said, in purgatory, I was like, this would be sort of like if you were having to go in purgatory and your purgation, your contrapasso was having to live days like this over and over and over again, you know, like this could almost be a contrapasso. So it's way better for you to do it now because I feel like you get a 10 times multiplier at least by doing penance in this life.
Right.
As opposed to the next. Right. And so cram them in, you know, because you might have to do 100 of these or so, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. So this is just one of the things that reading the Divine Comedy has really made me see and think about as he gives these really unique, well-fitting sufferings. Of course, in the Inferno, it is a punishment. In the Purgatory, it's retribution. It's healing. It's retributive healing, right? It's not just punishment. It's a cleansing.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say it is a punishment. It's just a purification.
Yeah, it's a cleansing.
Yeah.
That's right. Even though the punish or the like the sufferings, they might look very similar to what you see in hell, because actually there was something very similar in hell. people having to carry around stones on their back.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no hope in hell. It's just grueling punishment. But in purgatory, there's this element of hope and yearning, right? The people carrying the rocks, they're happy to carry it.
Right. And when they continue moving up the mountain of purgatory, they become lighter.
Yes.
You know, so Dante even mentions in that, like, he says, like, oh, I feel lighter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because his body's still, you know, Dante, the pilgrim, is going through this, and his, you know, he's body and soul in this. And so, like, he even reflects on, as he's ascending the Mount of Purgatory, how his body literally feels lighter.
Right. And he makes comments several times about, oh, man who is made to fly.
Right.
And he's got all kinds of imagery about that, dreams with eagles. And so that's that first level. You have misdirected love.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have deficient love.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so there he's got slothful.
Mm-hmm.
People who just, you didn't care enough.
Right.
So to speak.
Yeah. And this here is very important, because, like, slothful, like, has a misunderstanding probably of what we have in modern terms, because slothfulness isn't laziness. You know, it's acedia or slothfulness is it's a specific medieval term, which really means, like, kind of like spiritual sluggishness.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a failure to love God in appropriate fervor, in appropriate, like, desire.
Mm-hmm.
It's the guy who goes to Mass and doesn't actually pray through Mass. It's the guy who will try to pray every day, but, you know, it's just kind of like, oh, I just got to do this, and didn't actually, like, lift his mind and body and soul up to the heavens, up to God, right? And this is like this urgency that we have to have as men is that, like, listen, time is short, and, you know, we're almost 40, and I can remember, and it seems like not very long ago, I was 20.
Yeah.
And this time on earth is very, very short. And we only have a very short amount of time on this earth to glorify God in our lives. And when it's over, which could be any day.
Yeah, whoever you are, you might not make it to 40.
This, somebody listening to this right now, it's their last Lent.
Yeah.
That they have here on earth.
And it could be you.
And it could be me. It could be you. And so the time that we have here on earth is given so that we may glorify God. And so, as you know, Mother Angelica even says, so get cracking.
So get cracking. So we're going to keep talking about this. We've got still some more things to say. I just want to get in there. You know, so we've got the misdirected love, deficient love, and then, of course, the excessive love. And once again, we get back to the lustful, who had this, what he, you know, he calls an excessive love. Just such a beautiful way, I think. There's just so much order in it.
We're out of time on Catholic Radio. Go check us out on the podcast. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. So this is, like, very interesting, though. Like, this is, like, in this slothfulness, I found this to be very fitting, as most of these are. But, like, you know, the penance here are souls running, right? They shout examples of zeal as they pass, like Mary running to Elizabeth, or, you know, Caesar's speed of war. Like, speed is king. Like, this is what, you know, in business practices, you know, speed kills. Like, this is like how you progress.
I think of David dancing before the ark.
Before
here.
The ark, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that may even be an example that he has.
I haven't actually got here yet.
Okay.
in this part of the book,
actually,
but that just
does.
Seems to. There, he already had that earlier as during the, like, for people to see on the walls, like, as he, right, mm-hmm. before he got into purgatory proper, there were those carvings that were, like, lifelike.
Acedia, though, is just the sin of the comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the best way to put it. It's like the sin of the comfortable, because the only way to grow is through strain, is through pressure, is through...
But it's more of a mental comfort than it is a physical comfort. You know, like, slothful people are often very busy. They're often, like, they have a frenetic level of activity sometimes.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah.
But what they're doing is avoiding the thing they don't want to do.
Right.
Okay. You know, which we're all, you know, I know I'm guilty of this. You've got, you know, a list of tasks, you know, you need to do today. And one of them you really don't want to do.
Yeah.
And so
you really
put
it
off.
Yeah.
It's like the last thing you end up doing. Even though most of the time it's also the most important mm-hmm. and really ought to be done before all the others. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the slothful. And so then in the excessive love, he's got the, you know, we mentioned the lustful, but he's also got the avaricious, the prodigal, the gluttonous, and then finally at the very top, the lustful.
Mm-hmm.
So it just, you know, I think that if I was dealing with lust and envy in my life,
mm-hmm.
I would just think that the lust was worse.
Yeah.
And that I should focus on that because it's a bigger sin.
Well,
I would really think that. But according to what Dante says, and I agree with him, actually envy is a greater level of disorder. Not that he's like, oh, don't worry about that lust thing.
No.
But that really the rooting out the envy will actually benefit you. You might not be able to get rid of the lust in your life until yeah. you get rid of the envy.
Okay, so let me give you a spoiler alert on the lustful as they go up.
I'm ready.
Since you haven't read through yet. So like I mentioned, like this is the last level right before you get into to heaven, and it's through fire. And so it's this wall of flames, and everybody has to pass through it. There's no way around it. Everybody has to go through it. Like there's no going around, above, below.
So
like,
even if lust wasn't your bag, everybody
has sins, like disordered attachments of this sin.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's amazing is this is Dante is like completely fearful of it. Right, as anybody would, when you have a freaking wall of fire,
I would be afraid.
And you have, they says you have to go through it, right? And he stops and he's like, he's terrified of this fire. But Virgil, who's the voice of reason, you know, he's his guide. He reminds him. This is the beautiful part that I think he reminds him that hey,
Beatrice is on the other side.
Beatrice is on the other side.
Your mistress you never had.
Yeah. But yeah, so the lesson before paradise is lust, but it's not because it's the worst, but it's because the fire of purification has to burn through it completely because mm-hmm. nothing unclean enters into heaven, right?
Right.
So you can't get to Beatrice without love ordered correctly. And in order to do that, you have to pass through this fire.
Right. And you can't get to God, which, you know, can't.
Right.
Behold the beatific vision. You would be incapable of beholding the beatific vision if not perfected.
What I also love about Purgatorio is that while the Inferno is in isolation, everybody is in isolation. No one talks to each other.
Right.
No one, like...
Well, they compete
they hate,
with each other.
They hate
right.
each other.
Yeah. They slander each other.
Right.
Yeah.
While purgatory is a communal act, mm-hmm. no one is going alone.
Right.
They're going together. There's conversations of people going together. You see people, like ascending up the mountain.
They're in community. Yeah.
In community, right? And like they tell stories, they run together. And this is like the beauty of the communion of saints, right? They're in community. It's not this bureaucracy of intercession, but it's this like community of climbers together. And so again, I think this is just the beauty of the communion of saints.
Yeah.
And that hell is isolation. It is complete disparity while there's hope in purgatory. And when there's hope, you're hopeful with others. And you share that experience with others.
Mm-hmm.
just like here, right? When you have this hope within you, you share, you commune with others. It's intoxicating. It's attractive. People want to be like, there's this, you know, even in Peter, 3:16, he talks about how 1 Peter 3:16, where he talks about always be willing to give a defense of your faith for the hope that is within you. Mm-hmm. You know, and that second part is always like this important part, because it almost presupposes that in order for you to give a defense of your faith, meaning you have to be in communion with somebody else, because there has to be like some sort of conversation happening, because there's a dialogue happening, because you're giving a defense of your faith. It's because it's almost like somebody came up to you and questioned your worldview, because there's this hope within you. There's something different about you. Like you're different than everybody else around you. Mm-hmm. And this is what we're called as Christians, like to be the light of the world, to be Christ's hands and feet here on earth. That we sometimes, our lives are the only Bible in which people read. And so they question you. Like, why is it that you live the way you do? Mm-hmm. And it's because I have this hope in Jesus. And so I just find this such a beauty in how he orchestrates purgatory, ascending the mountain in communion with one another.
So the thing I wanted to kind of draw out as the you know, what, so great, what do we take away from this? Is
sin bad?
Sin bad. That's it. It's a great episode. But no, for real, is that, you know, the mountain of purgatory is in your destiny. It's in your future. I want you to start it now. Don't wait until your death to start the climb. Okay? There is no way around it. You are a sinner. I'm a sinner. This mountain of purgatory is the only way you're getting to heaven. It must be faced. The Lord will be there to draw you. One thing I love about the way he writes is that you can only climb the mountain of purgatory in the daylight. Mm-hmm. Without the light, you can make no effort. And that, you know, they explain that the will becomes impotent. You simply lack any capacity to move without the grace of God, right? That the light from the sun, you know, it is the only thing that you can't move without it. You can make no progress. You can stay where you are. You can kind of move around in that place where you are without the sun. But we need to start the climb now, okay? Because at the very beginning, who do we meet? We meet this character of Cato, who's a fascinating character.
Pagan.
A little bit scandalous, actually, that he would be there. But what he says has just like really stuck with me a lot. Dante and Virgil, they're there. They, you know, it's like, just get out of hell. And here they're in purgatory. It's like, wow, different place. We're outside. This kind of is awesome. Mm-hmm. This place seems great, you know? And they meet Cato and he says like, oh yeah, I'm here to like help people, you know, like get them going. You know, I'm sort of like I've been assigned to this area. And they're looking around and he admonishes them, says, what are you doing?
Get going.
Quickly. Like, run.
Yeah.
Don't wait. Hurry. Don't wait a second.
Right.
You don't know what you're delaying. You don't even realize what you're putting off.
Mm-hmm.
The ultimate bliss and joy of union with God, right? And I've just really been kind of like thinking about that, you know, almost as like a mental or spiritual motto of like, run, flee, like go now. Yeah. Like
run into the arms of Jesus.
Yes. I'm not out of fear, but you know, like You know when you come home from work
and your kids run
and your kids see you and they run to you because they just can't. If they could fly, they would. Mm-hmm. You know, just the joy of seeing you, and they just want to jump into your arms. Right? That is how we should run up this mountain of purgatory, and we should start now. Okay, you have pride in your life. You have to first recognize it. That's step one. And it's in the book. Dante's breaking the fourth wall all the time where he says, see, reader, see what I'm saying? Look beyond the veil. He's calling you to first recognize these things. So such a powerful book. Just can't recommend you to read it enough. It's just so insightful the way he orders our lives. I think the takeaway. Don't start the mountain of purgatory now.
Yeah. You know, Dante does this in like 33 cantos, and it's in a, you know, in a book that you can read, and he really lays it out in a beautiful way. We've only had an hour to really discuss it, and so we're not doing it justice by any means. And so really I encourage you to pick it up, to read it. Use Ascend the Great Books podcast as a resource.
Absolutely.
To really get more out of it.
You'll get 50 times more out of it with Ascend.
Yeah. And so I highly recommend it. And then what I recommend doing, this is what I did, and I found a lot of fruit in it, is as soon as I finished, I started it over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just like, I remember we finished last Lent, the Inferno. I closed it and I said like, nope, I'm going to reread it, because I also was making notes and, you know,
the second read would be faster because you're not having to do so much of the backstory.
Track the literal.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like, who is this person? What are they doing? Mm-hmm. You might not remember. There's a lot of people you meet along the way, but on your second read, you would say, oh, I don't really need to remember what their backstory is. I get the point.
Right. You're grasping the literal, but yeah. You read a book so that you can read it again.
A book like this, you certainly do. Yeah.
So I highly recommend it.
Cheers.
Cheers.